better off.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to A Pod of Their Own. This is episode 170 of A Pod of Their Own. I am Allison McCaig, and I am joined this week by my lovely co-hosts, Linda Serovich. Hello, Linda.
Hey, Allison.
And Maggie Wiggin. Hello, Maggie.
Hi, Allison.
So I have some breaking news on the podcast. The Mets have won a series.
Whoa. So you lie.
Is that even allowed?
Who can say? After not winning a single series in the entire month of June, the Mets took 2 out of 3 to start start July from the San Francisco Giants. So, I mean, you know, that was at least like the most watchable the Mets have been in like a month, was that series.
Is the June swoon officially over?
Maybe. I don't know.
I will say, like, man, we all go into June every year with really low expectations. And yet somehow they keep exceeding them.
Yeah, they keep the bar keeps getting lower and lower, and they keep like limboing under it. Yeah,
they're like in the Earth's crust at this point.
Yeah.
I don't know if they can sink lower every June.
Yeah. That was the worst month of my Mets fandom in quite some time, I think. Just like really bad, like not watchable at all.
Like historically bad too.
Yeah. Like at least in the Giants series, they looked like a baseball team that is capable of playing baseball a little. You know, and Scherzer and Verlander have been consistently better now for a couple starts now than they were earlier in the season. So like, I feel like at least there's that. At least those games are usually watchable from the starting pitching perspective. But, you know, sometimes the Mets just score one run in those games and then they lose anyway. But at least, like, at least Verlander and Scherzer are starting to pitch like they were supposed to, I think, is the main, like, difference, I guess.
And it is, even just aesthetically, even just knowing that, like, you're going to get a decent showing from the guys who are most likely to give it to you, that's a nice kind of psychological comfort that we did not have for a while there.
No. Yeah. I said this last week, you know, when in the past when the Mets are bad, Jake was always there and he was at least a reason to tune in. And yes, until recently, none of these guys were a reason to tune in.
Yeah. Hoping that at least in the second half that Verlander and Scherzer will be that for this team. Like, even if, because they're all but dead and buried in the standings at this point, it would take a miracle for them to, it would take a historic second half for them to get back in the race in any conceivable way. But hopefully at least like they will play like watchable baseball. Like, that's the best we can hope for at this point, sadly. And Verlander and Scherzer are a big part of that. But yeah,
realistically, they could get back into the race, but there's just so many teams.
There's so many teams to leapfrog, and so many other teams have to tank, and they have to do great. And it's a statistical improbability at this point. I think at this point, even the projection systems, because for a while I had felt that like the projection systems were more optimistic than the vibes and the general like record of the team. Like, there was still, like, residual projection from, like, on paper, this team should be good. So their playoff odds are still at 50%, even though they're, like, way behind. But I think that now they are so far behind and there are so many teams ahead of them that even the projection systems have caught up with the vibes and their projections are, like, 10% to make the playoffs now, which sounds about right.
I think it was 13%, which was kind of a pleasant surprise. I feel like that sort of says it all. Because I'd assume that they were like 5, but I'll take 13%. That's fine. I'll accept that.
Yeah. I mean, like, if you squint really hard, you can see it. I mean, you can see the talent inherent on the roster, right? The reason everyone thought that they were a almost sure lock to at least be a playoff team. You like that talent's still there, even if guys are underperforming. So there's that. And then there's also like, do you think the Marlins are real? Hard to say. You know that the Phillies are capable of just like, you know, tanking at any given time. And so, yeah, you can squint and see it a little bit. But there are, it's not just the NL East. Obviously, the Braves have the NL East basically on lock at this point. But there's a ton of other teams ahead of them in the wild card now that aren't just NL East teams. The Reds are really good.
When the Reds are ahead of you. Like, the Reds are fun. I'll give them that. But they're fun. They weren't supposed to be this good.
Nor were the Marlins either.
No. I don't know if I still buy into the Marlins. I'm sorry.
I do not buy into the Marlins.
The Mets won 101 games last year. Yes. So I don't think anyone saw that coming either.
Yeah.
No.
So I'll kind of give the Reds a little acceptance in there. But it definitely does feel like the upside down of last year.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, I mean, all we can hope for, sadly, at this point is watchable baseball, which who knows if we're going to get that. We'll see. At least Verlander and Scherzer have been better. I mean, I am not a person who, under any circumstances, hands it to David Peterson, but David Peterson pitched well this week. He pitched twice.
He surely did.
In his return to the big leagues,
did he pitch well, or did he just get lucky? Because I was there yesterday, and he was hitting batters. There was wild pitches. There was walks. I'm like, I don't know if I buy into David Peterson.
I don't. I think that it's a little column A, a little column B. I think that he, especially in that first start, what day was that? Monday? Tuesday? It was Tuesday because the Mets won that game. That was the only game in the Brewers series that they won. And he in both of his starts, he was doing his David Peterson stuff, walking too many guys, throwing too many pitches.
Yeah.
But especially in the Tuesday game, he got two key double plays that helped him out of innings, which was stuff he wasn't doing before. He was like kind of letting innings get away from him. But this week he did not. He stopped the bleeding. I don't think David Peterson is ever going to be a guy that where there's not going to be traffic on the base paths. There's just always going to be, but he was able to limit the damage in these starts. And that's kind of all you can ask for from your fifth starter. So if we could get this version of David Peterson, it's fine. But the problem is like Linda said, I don't think he, like, his stuff did not look demonstrably different.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Like, they haven't fixed him. He just was getting better results.
And to be fair, like, I mean, it's not as though he should have been shoving all this time.
Right.
It's not, you know, that didn't like line up with reasonable. It was more just like he needs to not pitch like absolute garbage.
You just need to be rosterable.
If he has gotten from like the absolute garbage to like moderate garbage, then that is
probably fine.
Yeah, and certainly better than everything else they have to offer.
Yes.
Well, I give him credit. Like we said, he was fine. He didn't give up runs, but I just do not enjoy watching him pitch.
It's never going to be a fun aesthetic experience, even at the best version of it. It's not a fun aesthetic experience, that's for sure.
No.
I don't enjoy watching David Peterson pitch. I'm sorry to David Peterson.
It's not why we're there.
Well.
No. I had many, many alcoholic beverages yesterday.
Good. That's the appropriate way to watch David Peterson. Like, literally, like, we will be home watching the game on TV, and Michael will say, it's a David Peterson start, time to open a beer, and he will go to the fridge. He drinks more. Like, I feel like we got to start making a graph, like, of, like, beers Michael drinks, like, on average during Mets games, and then David Peterson starts. It's like plus two beers more on average.
Please do this experiment without telling me.
No, I
got
to do it. Yeah.
But like I said, the game went a lot better than I expected yesterday. I will give him that credit. I will.
Yeah. So Linda, you were at the game, so you did not experience the ESPN broadcast like the rest of us did. But the one positive thing about the ESPN broadcast, although I'm not saying it wouldn't have happened on the SMY broadcast, but it was fun because, you know, the ESPN always does the mic'd up players. And so obviously right before the game, it was the All-Star rosters were announced, and it was announced that Pete Alonso will will make his third All-Star game. And live on the broadcast, he was mic'd up and he announced that he will participate in the Home Run Derby. They showed it
on the big screen.
Yeah. Oh, that's
cool. We all cheered when he announced it.
That's really good. I'm glad that they showed that in the ballpark too. That's happy. So it was cool. That was like a cool moment that he announced that like live on the broadcast. That was very fun. So like, you know, obviously Pete Alonso kind of only made the All-Star game because someone from the Mets has to, but at least we have, yeah, sad.
He did deserve to be there.
He did.
Yeah.
He did.
Yeah. But
was it 2009 that Daniel Murphy was the one?
Yes.
No, that was the year he led the team in home runs. I think there was another year that he went to the All-Star game.
Mm. Yeah. They're both real bad. Didn't he lead the team with like 7 home runs?
I think it was like that. I want to say it was nine.
Single digits.
That was pre like 2015 Daniel Murphy when he was not yet.
Oh yes.
It was regular Daniel Murphy.
Yeah.
But yeah, so at least Pete, nothing against 2009 or whenever the heck it was, Daniel Murphy. At least Pete actually like warrants a seat at that table.
Yeah, for sure. I'm like looking up what years he made the All-Star game.
And Pete said he's going to bring his high school coach to throw to him, which is really super sweet, too. Like, he's such a, like, how can anybody hate Pete? Like, Pete does not deserve the hate he gets because he's just so endearing and just wants to make people happy.
2014 was the year for Murphy. So before 2015.
Yeah, it was.
He, of course, made the All-Star game 2 other times with the Nationals, but
of course,
he deserved it.
We won't talk about that. He came in 2nd in the MVP voting in 2016, as we. You know.
Sorry, look what I started.
Etc. We don't talk about that. But yeah, 2014 All-Star Daniel Murphy was definitely a requisite All-Star appearance. And this is sort of the same, but I think that Pete is a little more deserving than 2014 Daniel Murphy was.
At least Pete leads the league in home runs, or at least tied.
Yeah. And at least we have Home Run Derby Pete Alonso to look forward to. That's got to give Mets fans something at this point. Like, come on, just throw us a bone, and the bone is Pete Alonso in the Home Run Derby. Hopefully,
because
Pete's
my niece's favorite. And like I said, my niece really started getting into baseball last year. And so while we were at the game, she was messaging my sister and she goes, I'm really excited to watch Pete on the Derby. I was like, oh.
Yeah, he's a big celebrity in this house too.
Yeah.
By contrast, the Atlanta Braves have 8 All-Stars.
We don't need to talk about them. No, I suppose we can.
We don't need to talk about it.
Gotten hurt tonight, though.
Ooh,
he stole his 40th base and came up lame.
Wait, Acuna did?
Yeah.
Ooh. Oh shit, that sucks.
That's not what you want.
Mm. I hope that he's okay. I have extreme hate in my heart for the Braves franchise and for mostly the fans, honestly, with a few exceptions, you know. There's good and bad in every fan base, but I just like, you know, with the chop and all that.
The good ones, you know who you are.
Exactly.
We've told you as much before.
Few and far between. But I don't really hold hate in my heart for any of the Braves players. And I actually especially really love Ronald Acuna because I feel like during like my ACL recovery, like he's been like hugely inspirational to me actually, because like you hear a lot about like players who, you know, tear their ACLs and they like go through the standard recovery and they come back and they're okay usually. But like Acuna had a really rough recovery and like wasn't himself for an entire season and then is like going like totally like unprecedented, having a historic season this year. And so it just like that, like, you know, was very inspirational to me to see like him struggle for a whole season and be like, yeah, see, even professional athletes like aren't always fully back to normal like right away. Sometimes it takes a long time, just like for pitchers, sometimes it takes like 2 years to recover from Tommy John surgery fully. And then you, but there is a light at the end of the tunnel, and like Acuña is even better than he was before now. So obviously, 8 might be over the top a little bit, but Acuña, there's no question about that one. And about most of them, really. There's no question about most of them, but I don't know. Orlando Arcia might be a little much, is all.
Like we said, you know, when your team's playing well, you're going to be more motivated to vote. Yes. Like, Met fans were just apathetic, I think, in general.
Yeah, that's true. I don't think I voted. I'm not 100% sure.
I think, once, because Pete said he would. Pete and Nimmo said they would give away like signed bats if you voted for them. So you had to prove that you voted for them. So yeah. I voted like once for that, because I was like, "Oh, dollars for dingers giveaway if I win," but I don't think I won.
I think you would know by now if you did.
Yeah.
But there was a really, really sweet, wholesome video of a kid, them interviewing a kid, and him saying that he voted for Lindor, and then Francisco Lindor like came up behind him, and it was really nice. It was really sweet.
That one little boy's look.
I know.
He was just stunned.
I think I would look like that.
I think I would too.
If it happened to me. So yeah, I mean, not like. You don't ever hope for injuries ever, but usually one or two injuries happen. And I'm talking besides like Acuña. So I don't know. Lindor may end up being named eventually, just either because guys get hurt or guys decline to participate or something comes up or whatever. So Lindor might get added. And I think David Robertson maybe has an outside chance of getting added if a pitcher chooses not to participate or there's an injury. So we'll see.
I'm fine with David Robertson taking some time off.
Yeah, true.
I'm fine with him like soaking in the tub for 4 straight days.
162 games of a baseball season can feel like a real grind to watch, especially if the team you're watching is the 2023 New York Mets. Golly. But you can put the excitement back into each and every game with MyBookie. Run lines, money lines, props galore. Nobody gives you more opportunities to win than MyBookie. Getting started is super simple. Deposit $200 and play with $300 instantly. Just use promo code APPLESAUCE or follow the link in the show notes to claim a MyBookie deposit bonus of 50% of your initial deposit. Whether you're a diehard fan or a newcomer to the sport, there's never been a better time to join the MyBookie family. Go ahead and sign up today using the promo code APPLESAUCE or follow the link in the show notes and secure your first deposit bonus of up to $1,000. Yes, up to $1,000. Whatever you put in, they'll meet you halfway, all the way up to $1,000. Again, this has been a rough season for the Mets thus far. So put a little more fun into it by using MyBookie. But anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie.
So something that also happened during the Giants series, which Linda is intimately familiar with, is that J.D. Davis returned to Citi Field for the first time. Since becoming a Giant. He gave a really interesting interview in which he was pretty critical of the Mets. And I thought this was a pretty damning interview, to be perfectly honest.
But it also explained a lot, if it's true.
Yeah. So I'm going to read like some little snippets from it. But he said, JD said, with so many moving parts and so much instability, it wasn't only me. There were a lot of guys in the clubhouse that felt like they were in survival mode, which is never what you want to hear. And he also talked about how like the firing of Chili Davis was like a kind of a watershed moment for him and a lot of other guys in that clubhouse. When he talks about the instability, that's like a big part of what he's talking about, because a lot of guys like JD had breakouts under Chili Davis. And then the Mets, he was Chili Davis, you know, whatever. Like, I'm not saying he didn't deserve to be fired necessarily, but it is clear that the players really loved him and they were pissed when the Mets fired him. That much was clear at the time. And the fact that J.D. Davis is still talking about it now means that, like, yeah, it was clearly a big deal to the players. And that was, like, kind of a trickle-down moment to the clubhouse where, like, he literally said that was a huge dip in our morale in the clubhouse after they fired Chili Davis. And it wasn't just him. It was, like, Dom Smith, McNeil, Alonso, Nimmo, because like all of those guys had huge breakouts in 2019 under Chili Davis. So it was like demoralizing to them to have their hitting coach get fired. And so I think that JD is like looking at the Mets now and seeing like, you know, coaching staff that may get fired, and thinking back to that time, and feeling like this is like an organizational problem with the Mets that persists. So yeah, it was interesting.
Well, and they also pointed out he was there for 3 years, had three different general managers, three different managers,
mm-hmm.
three different hitting coaches. Like, and he said they all had different philosophies. They all had different visions of what direction the organization was going to be in. So even when you just thought you were getting your feet under you, it got kind of yanked out again.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a period of tumult.
Yes. I mean, like, in the Mets, like, historically have not really held on to managers for that long. There's been a, like, you know, a pretty quick cycling through of personnel throughout the history of the franchise. They just, like, can't get, you know, one philosophy or, like, one set of guys to stick, it seems, and be successful. And that's kind of unfortunate that that has persisted into the Cohen era.
And also, I think he mentioned in 2022, that they told him he would play left field. So he's like, okay, I'll play left field. And then all of a sudden they're telling him you have to play third base. And he's like, but I haven't had any reps at third base. Now you're going to put me at third base? I'm not prepared. So it just, so that also to me was eye-opening about why that team underachieved in 2020. If you're not going in with a plan and having the players, you know, be prepared for whatever plan you laid out. Like, I get 2020 was weird and, you know, you were trying to adapt on the fly, but still, if you're telling somebody they're going to play left field and then all of a sudden you stick them at third base, that's something you can still plan for, COVID or not. So that to me was also, I don't know if that was a Luis Rojas thing, an organization thing, but if it happened to him, what else happened in 2020 that led to the chaos and that team underachieving?
Yeah.
Like, because Pete was not that good that year, I don't think, too.
Right.
Well, of course, death taxes and the Mets playing players out of position.
Out of position, right. Yes.
You know, yeah. That's...
Yeah, that's true, too.
That's
yeah.
Their calling card, practically.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, JD specifically said it's part of why his production suffered, because he didn't feel like he could commit to any one position. He was trying to learn multiple positions at the same time. And this year, like, you know, he ranks seventh among MLB third basemen in outs above average. He has 6 outs above average, which is like pretty dang good. Like, it's not like, you know, incredible or anything, but it's like very solidly above average, which is way better than his defensive metrics ever were with the Mets at any position.
Yeah, he's not a liability at third anymore.
Right. And he gives this quote in the interview. He said, trying to be the most versatile player I can be, I wanted to do what was best for the team. However, I think it was hindering my ability. If I were to stick with first base and third base or stick it out in the outfield, I think I would have gotten better over time instead of diving in and being 50% committed in one area and 50% committed in another area. It seemed like I wasn't getting better at each one.
He's not wrong.
No. Nope. And this is the other thing that we've talked about on this podcast. Your job, like, is to get the most out of your players and put them in a position to succeed. And clearly, that's not what's been happening in this organization. And now we have confirmation from a former player.
Yeah.
And it's just a reminder that, like, you know, as much as I think it's pretty clear that there have been meaningful cultural shifts since Steve Cohen took over, that you know, rot goes deep, and a lot of the structures that were in place, a lot of the people, a lot of the plans that are in place have been there since the Wilpons ran the show. And it's going to take time for all of those bad habits, cultural challenges. It's going to take a while for those to really fully transition into a healthy organization. And also, I mean, that's not to say that it will ever be a truly healthy and functional organization. I don't know that I would recognize it if it was, but you know, I think it's easy to think like, oh, now that Steve Cohen is in charge, everything is going to be ship shape, but it doesn't happen that fast. Organizational memory lasts a long time.
Yeah. There's a lot of people still in very high ranking roles in the front office from the Alderson regime. And I'm not saying that like they're doing a bad job. Like, I don't really know enough about the inner workings of the Mets front office to know like who's like has a good reputation, who has a bad reputation right now, and who's making which decisions that are turning out well and poorly. But I am just saying that like there's Cohen Epler guys, and then there's like leftover Alderson guys. Like, they're all mixed in together right now. And I think that like it will slowly transition to more and more of like what Steve Cohen's vision is. And we talked about, you know, the fact that based on Steve Cohen's press availability from last week, he made it pretty clear that he sees David Stearns as part of the future. He didn't directly say it, but he said as much to anyone who's been paying any modicum of attention. It was pretty clear that he wants David Stearns to be president of baseball operations. So then Stearns will bring in more of his people. And hopefully, you know, in the future, the organization will be more cohesive, at least, even if like, you know, you can agree or disagree with whatever philosophy they end up having, but at least there will be a coherent one hopes.
But knowing what we know now, like hearing, like, and this is a pattern, right, of players thriving after they leave the Mets. Is it more because I've been blaming Epler this whole time, saying he's horrible at, you know, eyeing talent. But is it that he can't identify talent, or they just can't put their players in a position to succeed? Or is it a little bit of both?
I think it might be a little bit of both.
Like, now I'm kind of doubting, like, maybe Epler can find talent, but it's just everything around it that's just, it's not the most, I don't want to say welcoming environment, but not the most healthy environment to develop talent.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think you do have to look also, you know, into the minor leagues and into the system that, you know, has turned out a handful of good players, but seems to swing and miss a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, start to dig into what's happening on those levels also, because it is all part of the same organization.
Yeah.
Well, now also I'm doubting, you know, hearing JD talking about all the instability, now I'm doubting, like, should they fire everybody? Because that's just another year of turmoil now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this kind of speaks to what Steve Cohen was saying a little bit.
Yeah.
And he was talking about not being rash and indirectly, you know, beating around the bush about it, but hinting at, like, you know, that people like Stearns will look at the organization and see turmoil if they see Cohen losing his head and just firing guys because the team is underperforming. Someone who wants to be president of baseball operations is not going to want to come into that environment, and Cohen knows that. So I think that is a pretty big reason why both Epler and Showalter are keeping their jobs through the season, at least, and why Cohen seemed committed to that. Because I think that the Mets have this reputation of instability now, and it's affecting them negatively, both in the clubhouse and, you know, how people see them from the outside, how other organizations see them. don't know.
But that I'm still, I can't figure it out, because I remember after Jake left, Buck Showalter said he got in touch with him to say that he thanked him for changing the culture in the clubhouse. So I don't know what changed from last year to this year, where it seems like it's they've done a 180 and that the organization didn't change when Jake thought it did. Like, what was, what's changed that much? Like, okay, you lost Jake, but you bought in Verlander. I don't think Verlander is the clubhouse cancer, not Clyburn. So it's the same team. I don't understand how, what went wrong, how they just did a complete 180 in 1 year.
Yeah, it's tough to say. I think that, like, again, like, like, not to, you know, harp on a cliche, but like, winning does fix everything.
Yeah.
And in 2022, they were just good. And that papered over a lot of problems that may have existed. I don't know. And in 2023, a lot of guys are underperforming, and I'm not sure it's related. The underperformance is related to this necessarily, but it helps it expose the cracks that exist in the foundation, I suppose. When the team plays poorly, these things just like come out and surface. Because if the Mets are, you know, if the Mets are 10 games over 500 when they face the Giants, no one's asking JD Davis these questions, right?
Yeah. That's true.
Like, I'm sure that they would have asked him about like his time with the Mets either way, but like, they wouldn't have framed it the way that they framed it and asked him about, like, oh, why'd you struggle so much with the Mets and why are you so good now? And look at, the Mets are playing so shitty. Like, I think that it would have had a very different, the article and the interview would have had a very different tone if the Mets were playing better this year.
Yeah, because this was kind of like a gotcha, kind of like
a little bit.
Yeah. Like, see, you're doing so well and we're so bad. Like, ha ha ha, the Mets blew it again.
Not undeserved, though, given how they've been playing. But yeah, I just think that the article took on the tenor that it did because the Mets are playing so poorly. So.
I mean, I didn't really notice, but I don't think Conforto had anything negative to say in any of his interviews. Not that I saw, anyway.
On the contrary, he seemed to be pretty moved.
Yeah.
Emotionally. Yeah. It was like kind of, I mean, maybe sad's not the right, it was kind of sad. I mean, he clearly like was feeling a lot of feels being back there. I miss him.
Yeah, I'm sad that he didn't get to play in the games at Citi Field, because I think obviously the crowd would have cheered him a lot. I mean, they did, but like for the tribute videos and stuff. But like, I'm sad that he didn't get to actually play in the games because he's injured. So
yeah. I'm also very sad that whoever put the tribute together did not just put a tribute of JD Davis face together. I thought that would have been more appropriate.
They should have hit you up to edit it, Linda, because you would have had a million of them ready to go.
Yeah, I kind of do. They're probably all still on my phone. So I'm just saying I was available and my phone did not ring. That's all I'm saying.
Shame on them. Shame on them. They failed to consult the JD Davis expert.
Mm-hmm. Although they built
a huge oversight.
They both did seem genuinely moved.
Yes. Yes.
So at least it wasn't all bad memories.
Yeah.
I think it was Vaz that tweeted, in another world or in another timeline, it would be Conforto and Nimmo holding down the outfield for years to come.
Yeah. 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 It is sad.
Yeah. Yeah. Things should have gone differently for Conforto.
Yeah. So, speaking of sort of like organizational Cohen era philosophy, talking about like things being different under Steve Cohen, what is different is that the Mets made a trade today, and it's the type of trade that probably would not have been done by the previous regime. In that the Mets traded Zach Muckenhern, who's thrown a few innings in relief this year in the big league pen, to the Mariners for in exchange for former Met Chris Flexen and Trevor Gott. Now, Chris Flexen is bad now. He's not been good this year. He was good for a brief period of time after he left the Mets. He went to, I can't remember if it was Korea or Japan. I think it was Korea. He went to Korea for a little bit, was good, and then went to the Mariners and was good for them for a bit. But this year, he's been awful. And so the Mets got him and took on his money in order to get Trevor Gott, who was the guy they really wanted to acquire in this trade, because they immediately designated Flexen for assignment. So they essentially bought this other player, this other pitcher, which is the type of thing that you do, what you can do when you have Steve Cohen's money. That is not the type of thing that the Wilpon regime would have done. That said, I mean, I don't know enough about Trevor Gott to know whether this is like a good trade or whatever. But what I do know is that it puzzles me why they didn't just, you know, if they're willing to spend $4.5 million, whatever's left on Chris Flexen's salary for the year, if they're willing to spend that money just to acquire a reliever that they want, why didn't you just like spend that money by signing a free agent, another free agent in the offseason?
How many does Gott still have years left?
I think he's a young guy, so yes. Okay. Let me see. I should have looked this up beforehand. Good job researching.
I mean,
we need like a little theme song, like not something obnoxious and pointed like the Jeopardy thing, but a little like
some Alice's smooth
researching,
some like smooth jazz. Oh no, I'm wrong. Gott's a veteran. He's 30. And he's been in the majors since 2015 on and off. So yeah, he's just a veteran guy who I think the Mets like. So yeah, no explanation.
So we're done dudes with optionable relievers.
Yeah. I was like, can you just find a dude like that in the off season then?
Yep. He has zero options and 4 years of service time accrued in total. So I don't know. Again, like, why not just sign Andrew Chafin?
Yeah, I don't know. It just seems like, are they hoping he helps them this year?
I think so.
Do they still think they have a shot?
I don't know.
Well, what I do like about this move is that it's not, it doesn't really matter if they have a shot. They really just need somebody capable of pitching at a major league level in that bullpen.
Yeah.
Yes. Like, and that's, you know, whether or not they are competing, I mean, they need to not be like shredding through these totally overmatched AAA guys, like at the rate that they do.
I think this is a little bit like they like the someone at in the Mets organization must like his stuff, and a little bit like we need warm bodies, and they're willing to spend money to get them. So, like, it's good in a vacuum, but it's just like, why didn't you, if you're willing to spend money on, you know, guys without options, why'd you do it now instead of before the season?
Guys.
Optionable relievers are the most important thing that we're prioritizing right now. Well, not anymore. You know,
better maybe they learned their lesson on that one.
Yeah, but most importantly, to note is that I hope that we can rebalance the scales of good Trevors.
yes, we've had a bad streak of bad Trevors.
Like, we love Trevor May. We love him so much. We loved Trevor Hildenberger. But yeah, the Trevor Williams moving over to the side of bad Trevors.
Boo.
Screwed up the balance of good versus bad Trevors. And so we need another good Trevor so that the good Trevors are the majority.
Oh, and speaking of good Trevors and good news, Trevor May is doing some radio work for the All-Star Game.
Yeah, which is really, really cool.
Which is fabulous. Such a great matchup for what he is so good at off the field. So really excited about that.
Yeah, I'm excited that he'll get to use like those skills, because he's really good at explaining things to people. explaining complicated baseball concepts to the regular fan. So that's really cool. I'm excited to hear him and what he has to say. So in other wider baseball news, Yankees pitcher Domingo Germán threw a perfect game, which sucks because he's an abuser. And the last perfect game was thrown by a beloved pitcher, King Felix Hernandez. And pretty much everyone was excited about, you know, obviously a perfect game is a very rare thing. In baseball, there haven't been that many of them, and it's a very cool thing. But everyone was just celebrating how cool it was without, you know, the context of what a shitty human being Domingo Germán is.
Yeah, and I kind of, you know, I don't expect every single person to, you know, suspend excitement at something like this, but you know, it especially would have been nice if there had been a little more kind of head-on discussion of it in, you know, the press and wherever else, because it was often kind of like hinted around, and like, I'm sorry, if you are comfortable hinting around it, then just say it. Like, if it's relevant enough for you to say, you know, coming from a time of turmoil in his personal life, if it's relevant enough to say that, then it's relevant enough to say, what was that turmoil? Was it that, you know, was that your girlfriend had to call other people on the team for protection?
Yep.
Because that's pretty relevant, I think.
Yeah.
And that it happened at a Yankees charity event?
Yeah. Yeah, that Sabathia was hosting.
Yeah.
Oof.
Yeah, like, just awful, no matter which way you slice it.
Yeah, it was a really upsetting situation.
Yeah.
The best tweet that I read about this whole thing, which is sad, is a domestic abuser ruining a streak from an all-time beloved pitcher against a team that is intentionally playing as badly as possible to permanently alienate the entire city by moving away. How can you not absolutely hate baseball?
Yeah.
Which, well, yep, that pretty much sums it up.
Yeah.
The only thing that I kind of, I don't want to say liked about it, but the only thing is, it was the A's, so how many people were even watching the game? So, everybody's talking about it the next day, but it seems like one of those games that'll just kind of be forgotten about in a year or two. Like, he'll be that dude, like, all right, he threw a perfect game, him. But
he threw a perfect game, asterisk. It was against the 2023 Oakland Athletics, who were losing on purpose.
And one person who was there, and I just want to shout out the article that they wrote about it, is a friend of the show, Jen McRamos, who we've had them on a couple times before, great writer, and also a survivor of domestic violence. And they were there on like their first big league press pass in like a decade or something. And that was the game that they were there for and had to deal with that in the press box, and just all of that coming together. And the piece that they wrote about it is really thoughtful. And again, you know, certainly doesn't shy away from the fact that, like, yes, this was an exciting thing that happened. It is rare. It is generally, you know, a good capital G kind of thing, but that doesn't, you know, it doesn't make it possible to ignore all of the greater things going on in the situation. So I would definitely, we'll link it, but yeah, just in terms of people who are there, like, oh man, Jen was there. That is just a rough, that is a rough spot.
Yeah. I can't imagine the emotions that they were feeling. Yeah. And so
I saw one tweet too, saying, you know, it is an achievement on the field. It is. But shame on everybody who allowed this achievement to happen.
Like, yeah.
There was just a failing on Major League Baseball's part, too.
Yeah. Like, and I think that something like this sort of underscores the silliness of the argument of, like, when people say, oh, so people who make a mistake shouldn't be allowed to ever make a living ever again, and they should be cast out of society. Is that what you think? And it's like, no, but like, there's another extreme where they are absolutely adored by fans and put in the spotlight and put on a pedestal and given the chance to accomplish these incredible feats that so few have accomplished and get accolades for it.
Yeah. And
that's a privilege, not a right. Like, yes, yeah. Yes, the right to like live with dignity and make a salary doing something and, you know, doing something with your life and be able to feed yourself. Yes, that's a right. One could argue that's a right, but it is not a right to be a professional baseball player. That's just simply not true.
It's and a privilege. Did Domingo Germán throwing a perfect game against the 2023 Oakland Athletics really enhance the season in any way? Like, if he was still suspended or banned from baseball and that never happened, would anybody care? Would anybody even notice? Like, it's not like...
I guess you'd have to ask a Yankees fan. I don't know.
It's not like the World Series turned, or this was just like a blip in the radar that nobody's going to remember in a year. So, you know, his personal achievement is just that. It's for him now and for him to get accolades for. And that's all that it comes down to now. And like we said, now they were the veiled controversial player, or because now they had to soften it so that way they could celebrate this without, you know, without mentioning the abuse. But you shouldn't soften it. It's still a truth, just like the fact that he threw a perfect game is a fact. Both things are facts, and both things can be mentioned. You don't have to get rid of the domestic violence just because he achieved something. Yeah.
So yeah, we will link Jen's piece in the show notes and tweets. It's called "The Perfect Game That Also Sucked," which I think is a great title. And it's in Defector. So please check it out. We will link it. Another article about this that I think treated this situation with the nuance that it deserves that I wanted to shout out was Kyle Kishimoto in FanGraphs wrote an article titled "On Comfort, Perfect Games, and Domingo Germán," which I thought that article was also excellent and was one of the few that I saw that actually treated this with care and nuance and talked about, you know, all the sides to it and didn't, you know, couch and acknowledge the rarity of the feat while also talking about the abuse. So we will link both those articles in the show.
Though I did see one tweet that it's only the 10th most rare thing that you can achieve in baseball. So while rare, there are rarer things still. What the most rare thing ever to happen in a baseball game is hitting 2 grand slams in one inning, and it's only been done once.
Hat tip, Fernando Tatis.
Fernando Tatis.
Senior.
Yep.
Mets comeback player of the year, 2008. Just about.
Around that time.
Ish.
I don't know if that's ever going to happen again either. Like, what are the odds?
Probably not.
Well, and he did it off the same pitcher.
Yes. How?
I mean, that's the part that seems unlikely to be matched.
Yes, how do you leave him in?
That's going to end up being in one of those immaculate grids, and it's going to be like 100% because it's the only answer.
And every Mets fan will get it.
Yeah. Yes. But yeah. So, you know, I think the, like, it's tough because your feelings of how can you not be romantic about baseball? Like, because, like, one of the things about baseball is every time you go to a baseball game, you have a chance of seeing something amazing and something that you've never seen before. But then, you know, it has to be soiled by this. I wish it didn't have to be. I wish we didn't have to talk about it. But so few people will. So those of us who are willing to talk about it have to talk about it. And those of us, like, we have a responsibility to do so. But yeah. Speaking of rare feats, We, you know, we're doing our usual, like, balance the sad stuff with good stuff. So a rare feat is that recently, over the weekend, Yankees minor league manager Rachel Balcovicht was ejected from the game by a female umpire. So it was a female umpire ejecting a female manager, which is
that is the Mets, or that is the baseball version of the bench shell test.
Yes. It really
I've
is.
I just invented it.
It really is. So that's kind of funny. The article about it opens with, in some ways, it was a typical argument between a minor league manager and an umpire. In another, nothing ordinary at all. Which is true. She was just arguing balls and strikes, basically. Not balls and strikes. It was a disputed call at first base. My apologies. But yeah, so that's funny.
Wow, perfect.
So yeah, more of that in the future, please, at higher levels of the minors.
Amazing news bit. Perfect. No notes.
Yes, we love it. And we will end the show this week, like we always do, with walk-off wins, where each of us talks about something that is making us happy this week, baseball-related or otherwise. Maggie Wiggin, what is your walk-off win for this week?
My walk-off win is our annual family outing to Coney Island this year was on Saturday, and it was just lovely. Coney Island wins every time, as far as I'm concerned. It's especially excellent having two daredevil children who are both tall enough to ride almost all the rides by themselves.
Oh boy.
I'm not a daredevil. I enjoy various roller coaster type experiences. I don't do Tilt-A-Whirl. But at Coney Island, they're all like $12 each, and I don't love them $12 worth. So I love being able to just shove my children and their just ridiculous appetite for destruction and just be able to like send them on their merry way, and they will ride all day long. And there were hot dogs and there was ice cream and prizes were won. My daughter had been playing one of the games just like against her dad, and you know, won a very nice teddy bear in that context. And so my son sat down to try, and like four other adults sat down at the same time, and like he did his darndest. And then another woman won, you know, because she's not an almost 9-year-old boy. And she immediately turned around and said to him, "Which one do you want?" And I was like, that is a very stand-up moment there. Cause like, you know, I mean, we all like the little prizes, but also the stuffed Luigi that Thomas selected. I have a feeling he is going to treasure that somewhat more emotionally than she would have whichever one she picked out for herself. So hat tip to nice lady who gave a little boy Luigi at Coney Island on Saturday. I do not know your name if you are listening today. But it was just a lovely time. You know, the view from the Wonder Wheel, lots of great subways if that's what you're into, and that is what my crew is into. It was a really lovely, like perfect Coney Island kind of day.
So that's awesome.
Thank you, Coney Island.
I've never actually been to Coney Island, and
I feel like I should.
I will go there with you guys.
Okay. A Poto trip.
I will say, yes. Like, I've never really been to the beach. Like, I don't, because it's just like every other city beach, except it's way more crowded, and I would like to be on the rides.
Yeah, that makes sense.
As we've said, if you would like to send us to Coney Island, it's only $5 to subscribe.
Yes.
We will go to a Cyclones game, too.
Yes,
that is the other thing. I do really want to go to a Cyclones game, but we are always, like, absolutely tapped out mentally by the time that would come rolling around. But, yeah, for sure, that would be send a Pato to Coney Island is a good venture.
Yes, please. Linda Serovich, what is your walk-off win for this week?
Well, as I've already mentioned, I was at the Met game yesterday. Yes, that was yesterday. It was the first. This is the latest I've probably ever gone to a game. I just wasn't motivated to go. But I mean, I bought the tickets before the season started because I knew I had to look to see when the Giants are coming to town. And so I had to make sure to see JD. And a lot of people had the same idea I did because I saw a lot of Wilmer Flores jerseys. I saw a lot of Michael Conforto jerseys. I was wearing my JD Davis jersey. So we were still out there, you know, supporting our former Mets. So as we're waiting to get in the stadium, like just as they're opening the gates, the skies open up and it starts thunderstorming. So it thunderstormed and poured like right up to 6 o'clock, but you know, there was no rain delay, there was no nothing. So it ended up being, you know, perfect by the time game time rolled around, and I didn't have to listen to the ESPN broadcast, which was also a plus. I was tempted to get the Jacob's Pickles chicken sandwich that had the donut on it, ooh, but I thought that might be too much. So I got like Pig Beach barbecue or something, the sandwich, because I wanted to get something different. I wanted to get something, you know, that was new for this year. So I got a brisket sandwich, which was good. And then I got the churro nachos, which I had heard a lot about. But
I heard that they're like discontinuing them.
Yes. Yeah, it was the last day for them. Oh, but they were amazing, because the father and son in front of me ordered it. And then I ordered it. And then they have to like especially make it. So I saw him making it for the little boy. And I see him just like piling whipped cream on top of these things. I was like, that's how it comes. I was not expecting that. So yeah, it's nachos dusted in like cinnamon sugar and then dulce de leche sauce, and then mounds and mounds of whipped cream.
Dying over here, Linda. Jeepers.
So yeah, it was good. But then like I said, I got we were right near a specialty cocktail stand. So they had, it was like their Pride Month drink that they were continuing for July, I guess. It was a watermelon vodka lemonade, which was very good. So I had multiple watermelon vodka lemonades. But, you know, and then, you know, the game itself, I didn't have high hopes for, but Peterson was fine. And I wanted somebody to hit a home run, because now they shoot fireworks off when somebody hits a home run. So Mark Hanna did. We were all like, hey, thank you, Mark Hanna. We got to see the fireworks. And then Pete did at the end, because my sister was there and she said she's never seen a live Pete home run. And so then
that was quite a prodigious one.
Yes. Yes. So, I mean, he, like, you know, when Pete gets a hold of one.
Oh, yeah.
So
he doesn't hit out wall scrapers. He doesn't. No.
Like, he's not feeling well if it's a wall scraper, or like he didn't eat his Wheaties that morning.
Infield pop up scrapes the wall for him.
Yes, like Alvarez too. And this is my first time seeing Alvarez too. So I was happy about that in person. So yeah, my sister finally got to see a Pete home run. We got to see the fireworks. And then they shot the fireworks off. It was really cute. They shot the fireworks off after they won. And you could see Lindor was like, oh! I was like, yeah, you probably haven't seen many of the fireworks, have you? Like, so Francisco seemed to really like the pyrotechnics display outdoors. So
he does have a sense of childlike wonder about him,
though. Yes, it was really sweet. And you know, JD got a double that like brought the game within one in the eighth inning or something, and I'm like, yeah. I was like, can I please cheer? I know, I was like, they can get out of it, I just want JD to do well. So at least he got a hit, then he struck out with the bases loaded, I think in the ninth or something. And we saw Wilmer. Everybody still cheered Wilmer. There was a Wilmer Flores chant going up. The Mets have been miserable, but it's always a good time at the ball, or at least that day, at least. Even it gets in and it rained a little bit in the ninth. It started coming down again. But it wasn't awful. So it was a good day at the ballpark. For one day. And so And you know, I really wanted to show JD my jersey, but since it was raining, they didn't really take batting practice on the field, so I didn't really get to see him and, you know, being JD. But next time.
You didn't get to have a moment like I had with Lucas Suda after he was traded.
That was so sweet.
I still have that baseball. It's a treasured possession of mine.
JD deserves to know he brought joy for a few seasons. So, but yeah, and then I do have another walk-off win on Saturday. I did not watch the Met game because I was getting a new car. So now I have a new fancier blue because I've always had colorful cars. I don't like boring color cars. Like my first car was teal. My second car was purple. Then all I had was black. So the past few years I've had black. So now my car is blue, and I'm a Carolina Panthers fan, and it's a Panthers blue. So now I'm really super excited. So, and Mariano Rivera Jr. was my
salesman.
Was my car salesman again. So
excellent.
So it's like I'm going to the Met game tomorrow, and you know, like, am I still allowed into the dealership? So yes. Yeah, so now I have a Panthers blue car, and I'm very happy. So that's my two walk off wins.
That's awesome. My walk-off win for this week is that I got my second session done of my BoJack Horseman tattoo, so now it is complete, and I love it, and it's very
it
nice.
It looks so good. I was loving it on Facebook.
It is very pretty.
Thanks. Except I might not have actually hit the heart because I forget these things. I was thinking, heart!
Yeah, it was multiple sessions, and now it's finally done, and I'm very excited. And yeah, it's been a while since I've gotten a tattoo, and so I always get the itch every few years, and so that'll scratch it for a while.
Where is it? I couldn't tell.
It's on the back of my calf.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm so pleased with how it turned out. And yeah, I got to show it off to my friends today because I went to dinner with a few friends and I got to show it off. Which I guess brings me to a second walk-off win. I won't identify my friend by name because she's pretty private. And so I don't want to talk about her personal stuff on the podcast. But a very close friend of mine just went through a battle with cancer. And this week is her last chemo treatment. So that was a really happy moment. And we just had dinner to celebrate her birthday. So it's been obviously a long few months for her. And she kicked its ass as we all expected. So that was just a really nice time I got to spend with my friends today, and that my friend's going to be okay. And we're all very happy about that. So that's kind of my second walk-off win. So that does it for the show this week. You can find all of our fantastic podcasts on homerunapplesauce.com. If you want to support our work and send us to Coney Island and to the Cyclones.
We'll do a new fundraiser every week. Like this week, we want to go to Paris. Some fundraisers will be more successful.
Go to the London series. We'll go to Coney Island. If you want to support our work and also just make sure that we get paid a little money to do you can go to patreon.com/homerunapplesauce. Plus, I think even more importantly, at this point in the online stage, you can get access to our Discord where you can keep in touch with us, because who knows how much longer Twitter is even gonna exist at this point.
Does Discord have rate limits? I don't think so.
It sure doesn't.
We've never found them.
It sure doesn't. There aren't limits as to how many Discord chats you can send in a day. So you can hang out with us all day in the Discord. It's we're a fun little community over there. So you should really join our Discord if you want to keep in touch with us, because one day our Twitter might just disappear and then who knows what'll happen. You can go to patreon.com/homerunapplesauce and support our work if you want to get access to the Discord and also all sorts of bonus pods and other fun things. Please subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts from. You can find Home Run Applesauce on social media, on Twitter and Instagram at Home Run Applesauce or at HR Applesauce. Apologies. Sometimes I mess that up because I say Home Run Applesauce for the links, but it's just HR Applesauce for the handles for Twitter and Instagram. Our Twitter handle and Instagram handle and TikTok handle is at a pod of their own. You can also email the show aa.apodoftheirown@gmail.com. Each of us are on Twitter. I am at Petite PhD. Where are you, Linda?
At Linda Servich.
And you, Maggie?
At Maggie162.
Please rate and review the podcast on your favorite podcast app of choice. It really helps people find it. The original intro and outro music to this podcast is by Bunga. Let's go Mets. And don't forget, there is no crying.